with striking TV writers, organizing successes at your local Starbucks, or justice for hotel workers. Working Voices with hosts Joe Ayala and Enrique Sanchez is all about dignity and respect for all workers. Join us and be a part of the solution. Mondays at 5 a.m. on KPFK 90.7 FM in Los Angeles and online for the world at kpfk.org.
A union town, all down the line. This is a union town.
Hello, and you are listening to Eco Justice Radio, a project of SoCal 350 Climate Action. Our show presents environmental and climate stories from a social justice frame, featuring voices not necessarily heard on mainstream media. Eco Justice Radio acknowledges that we record the show on the traditional territory of the Tongva and all of their relatives. Welcome, I am Jessica Aldridge. On today's show, Microplastics Are Everywhere, What's the Risk? I will be interviewing Dr. Scott Coffin, environmental toxicologist and research scientist at California State Water Resource Control Board. Dr. Scott Coffin is a research scientist and subject matter expert for microplastics at the California State Water Resource Control Board, where he leads the agency's efforts to monitor and manage microplastics pollution in drinking water and the environment. Dr. Coffin holds a PhD in environmental toxicology from the University of California, Riverside, and has been studying plastics impacts on the environment since 2014. Today we are in for a very eye-opening discussion, an environmental and human health matter that is growing in concern, research, and solutions. Microplastics. Small, micro-sized plastic fragments are showing up in our water sources, rain, drinking water, and beverages like beer. It is in food, salt, and seafood, and recently it has been found in human breast milk, placentas, human lungs, and blood. One report indicated that blue whales are consuming 10 million pieces of microplastic particles a day. As plastic fragments, it continues to shed fibers smaller than a strand of human hair. Most of the time, we are unaware how and when this happens. Did you know that when you open a plastic cap on a bottle, you release thousands of plastic particles? But then there's also our clothing, roads, artificial turf, food packaging, tea bags, or really any plastic that comes in contact with friction, hot liquid, or hot food. The biggest human body entry point for microplastics, it's not our water, food packaging, or clothing, although all of these are still of great concern. It's the air we breathe. Plastics and their chemical additives can be toxic. Of more than 10,000 unique chemicals used in plastics, more than 2,400 are of potential concern, most of which are unregulated. So should we be worried about microplastics in the environment and in our bodies? What is the average level of human exposure? And is there enough to prove that a health risk exists? Well, our guest, Dr. Scott Coffin, has been studying plastics since 2014. He is a toxicologist and research scientist at the California State Water Resource Control Board. He joins us today to speak to the issues, how microplastics are entering our environment, what solutions are being put in place to assess risk and implement precautionary solutions, and how we might limit our own exposure. Thank you for tuning in to Eco Justice Radio and our show, Microplastics Are Everywhere, What's the Risk? I am your host, Jessica Aldridge. It is my honor to welcome our guest, Dr. Scott Coffin, environmental toxicologist and research scientist at California State Water Resources Control Board. Welcome to Eco Justice Radio.
Happy to be here, Jessica.
Yeah, welcome, Scott. I am so super interested in this conversation, and I have so many people I want to share this with. As many of our listeners know, my background is waste, and so I have a special interest here. Dr. Coffin, you have a PhD in environmental toxicology. Before we get into everything and anything about microplastics, what does an environmental toxicologist do, and why is it important?
Environmental toxicologists study the interactions between humans and the environment. This can be as broadly as the pollutants that we put into our drinking water, and as complicated as global climate change and impacts to ecosystem services that can alter the ability for our planet to support life on the system, including ourselves.
In the world of environmental toxicology, where do you focus your time and energy, and why do you do that?
So since 2014, I've been focused mostly on plastic pollution, and particularly on the effects on aquatic ecosystems, as well as humans more recently, thinking about many different ways that plastic can harm us, from the particles themselves to the chemicals that are intentionally added to plastics. Many people have probably heard about bisphenol A or BPA. These were banned in water bottles for babies some years ago. That's just one of tens of thousands of intentionally added chemicals to plastics that we are exposed to on a daily basis every time we use any materials that are made of plastic. And endocrine disrupting chemicals are chemicals that interfere with our very delicate endocrine system. This is the system that controls our hormones, can control our mood, our weight, our ability to reproduce, our development. And very small quantities of these chemicals that we're exposed to on a daily basis can dramatically affect the outcome of our lives, and even our children and grandchildren's lives. So this is something that's been very interesting to me scientifically, but also quite worrying to me as a citizen of the planet.
And your thesis, your PhD, was based on microplastics, correct?
So I studied the interactions between these plastic, these endocrine disrupting chemicals, plastics, and organisms in the environment that interact with plastic. So by this point, probably all of us have seen a photo of a sea turtle with a straw up its nose, or a seabird with a lighter inside of its gut. For toxicologists, we want to know what that's doing to the organism. What happens when plastic enters the guts of these different critters out in the environment? Are the chemicals that are added to these plastics transferring to their bodies? And if so, at what quantities should we be concerned about them? So for my PhD, I gathered plastics from the North Pacific Gyre, also known as the Great Pacific Garbage Patch. Many of us have probably heard about this. It's a garbage patch twice the size of Texas off the coast of California. So I collected plastics from the garbage patch that had been out there for probably 5 to even 15 years. And they've been subjected to sunlight and waves and salt. And a lot of the chemicals that were originally added to those plastics might have already migrated off of the material. And they might have also, the plastic might have also picked up other harmful chemicals and microbiota out in the environment. And so I was interested to know, if a seabird were to eat a lighter or something floating in the Great Pacific Garbage Patch, what chemicals are being transferred to that organism? So I took these plastics, I found virgin versions of these plastics, so a lighter that had not been in the ocean that I just bought from a store, and I subjected the lighter to gut conditions that mimic what it would look like inside a bird, looking at low pH and surfactants and high temperature within a bird's gut to try and mimic those conditions. And I took the extracts from the bird gut leachates, and I used what's called an in vitro bioassay, which is a very fancy term for a cell culture that's been genetically engineered to emit light when the estrogen receptor is activated. And this is a really cool tool that allows us to use biology, human biology, to indicate if there is some activity going on with chemicals. And so it's a very, very sensitive receptor-based assay that I used, which let us know what types of chemicals and what potencies of endocrine disruptors are coming off of these plastics, which is really relevant for assessing risks to these species.
And we're going to talk about risk and the definition of risk in a moment. I want to define microplastics. What are they? How do they originate? Are they already these small plastics like what we're used to in facial scrubs, where it's like you can put these little things on your face and exfoliate your skin? Or is it degraded plastic? Is it all of it?
Microplastics is a very broad term that historically has not had a harmonized or unified definition. The term microplastics is relatively new. It's only been around for about 15 years or so. And the term micro typically refers to, in the science world, a micron-sized thing. And for microplastics, we're actually talking about things all the way as large as the tip of your thumb, something that's in as small as 5 millimeters. You can see that with your naked eye. Particles as small as 1 nanometer can also be considered microplastics. And for that, the most expensive microscope in the world will not be able to visualize a 1 nanometer particle. It's smaller than DNA. And these different particles, this very large range of particles, we've been concerned about since approximately 1969. That's the first time that scientists have ever documented microplastics in the environment. They were looking for sargassum, which is a type of plankton in the Sargasso Sea, which is the Gulf of Mexico. And they were finding lots of little bits of white polystyrene that resembled sargassum. And the researchers, they started counting them and documented it in the journal Science. And the results from that study really kicked off the entire field thinking about, well, what do these small particles do? And the original hypothesis from the researchers was that these particles are picking up other chemicals that are harmful, PCBs, DDTs, things that we were quite concerned about for marine life, and hyper-concentrating those chemicals on the particles. When a fish or something ingests those particles, they may have higher exposure levels to these harmful chemicals. So that was a hypothesis back in 1969, which was really in many ways ahead of its time, as it took us about 50 years to get around to finally shedding light on whether or not microplastics really do increase exposure for PCBs and DDTs. Turns out in most cases they don't, which is a good thing. But it's an evolving science. And your question about, is this just facial scrubs? Is this that's a common misconception that microplastics are only created intentionally or in consumer products. Microplastics they can break off of anything that you use. So for instance, when you unscrew the lid of a plastic water bottle, you're releasing tens of thousands of microplastic particles. You can't see them,
yum,
but it's like a little puffball of microplastics is exploding into the air every time you unscrew the lid.
And into your water. I mean, there's the water right there.
It goes into the air. Yep, exactly. And so we're really like swimming in microplastics, figuratively and literally, because these particles, they're constantly shedding from everything that we use.
And you're a research scientist at the California State Water Resource Control Board, which is under the California EPA, the Environmental Protection Agency. What is the State Water Resource Control Board? What is their role? And why is it that microplastics in water has now become a concern to them?
So the California State Water Resources Control Board is the agency in California that oversees water. And what's notable about our agency with respect to microplastics is that in 2018, we were handed a bill from the legislature that requires us to set regulations for microplastics in drinking water.
In California.
In California. No other government anywhere in the world has any requirements like this. We are the first state and actually the first government agency anywhere in the world to define microplastics legally, require monitoring, period, anywhere, and have an analytical method that we can accredit laboratories for.
Oh, that's great. Dr. Coffin, when you assess toxicity risk, you look at a combination of exposure and hazard. Exposure and hazard. Can you explain the difference between those two, exposure and hazard? I mean, aren't we all exposed to plastic? Every single, I have plastic on my headphones. I'm talking into plastic. I'm looking into plastic. I'm sitting on plastic. I mean, it's everywhere.
So the term risk to a toxicologist means something different than it does to in many other fields. And like you said, it is the combination of exposure and hazard. You can think of this very easily as hazard is a hazard could be a shark. Sharks are hazardous. If you are exposed to the shark, you're swimming nearby it, you are at risk. But if you're not exposed to the shark, there is no risk. Likewise, there could be sharks that are more or less hazardous. A great white shark, I would not want to be swimming nearby, whereas a nurse shark, I would have no qualms with. And so for plastic pollution, we're exposed every day. And some reports say that we're exposed to a credit card per week. Likely that's a high overestimation. It's more like a grain of salt per week. But
Of microplastics. Yeah.
But neither of those really have any meaning unless we know how much is actually harmful. And for that, we need to understand the hazard. How toxic are microplastics? Compare it to the exposure, determine the risk.
And where are we seeing the microplastics accumulating in the natural environment and what's being done about that? I mean, you were talking about the state law recently for the state of California.
In the environment, we see a lot of accumulation in agricultural farms and places that we apply biosolids. The reason for this is a lot of the plastics that we use, say from our clothing, when you wash it in the washing machine, it generates thousands to millions of microfibers per wash. Those fibers go to the wastewater treatment plant. The wastewater treatment plant does a really great job at removing them. Up to 99% of microplastics are removed in these plants, but they're removed into the biosolids. And the biosolids is another word for like treated sludge. In California, we utilize that biosolid as a resource. It's very high in nutrients. Plants love it. And there's a couple farms in California that use very high quantities of it. And so that's really one of the major sinks for plastics, is where a lot of our plastic goes. Some amount is going to make it through the wastewater treatment plant and go out into the environment, into the oceans sometimes. And a lot of the other plastic that we use on a daily basis can also make its way into waterways through rain and being picked up by the air as dust and traveled long distances. One of the greatest pathways for plastics into the marine environment or an aquatic environment is actually what we call stormwater. A high rain event happens and it washes all the particles that are accumulating on our streets into the waterways. Those particles, those plastic particles in the streets, come from our tires. So the tire tread indicator on your car, when you go and you put your thumb on it and you see if it's bald or not, well, all of the mass of your tire that's gone, it didn't just disappear. It's in
our water.
It's in the roads waiting for stormwater or something to wash it into a stream, a lake, a reservoir, the ocean, an estuary. And in some cases, these particles can be extremely toxic to marine life because tires have a lot of chemicals that are quite harmful.
Well, I'm going to hold us there. We're going to go to break real quick. And I want to talk about that marine life, about what's happening. It's happening all over the country, all over the world. But there's one study in San Francisco Bay. And I want to come back to that and have you speak to that real quick. So everyone, hold on. We're going to continue this conversation. We'll be right back. Hey, listeners, quick break here. We hope that you're enjoying Eco Justice Radio. Stay connected by subscribing to Eco Justice Radio on all major podcast apps and visit our website, ecojusticeradio.org, to check out previous shows, guests, extended versions, and get connected with us on social media. Today, you are listening to Microplastics Are Everywhere. What's the Risk? With host Jessica Aldridge and guest Dr. Scott Coffin, environmental toxicologist and research scientist at California State Water Resources Control Board. We've been talking to Dr. Scott Coffin about microplastics and plastics getting into our environment. We're going to talk about what that means to the human body here in a moment. But you had just mentioned before we went to break about this getting into estuaries, about getting into our waterways. One example, I mean, there's many examples around the country and the world, but one is what's happening to the San Francisco Bay Area. They have a partial estuary up there and other environmental areas. What's happening?
So the San Francisco Bay Area is highly densely populated. There are millions of people that live right around the bay, constantly driving, generating a lot of tire wear particles, as we mentioned earlier. There's many wastewater treatment plants that discharge treated water into the bay. Again, some of those microfibers from our clothes are going to be making it through. And in 2019, researchers from the San Francisco Estuary Institute and the University of Toronto in Canada, as well as the Five Gyres Institute, they partnered and did a monitoring study to look for microplastics in surface waters. They also looked for plastics in fish tissues, a little bit of sediment, and wastewater treatment plant effluent and stormwater. They wanted to get a complete picture for how much plastic is there and how is it getting there. And what they found was the vast majority of plastic particles are fibers. Again, likely from our clothing, but other types of particles can be fibers too. I mentioned tire wear particles. Sometimes those can also occur as fibers, but generally they're more rubbery fragments. They also found that stormwater had contributed 300 times higher concentrations to the bay than all of the wastewater treatment plants combined. That was a dramatic and surprising finding, where we had not really considered stormwater to be a relevant pathway for plastics getting into the environment. Really, we had underestimated the contribution of tires to the microplastics issue. And this finding has prompted a lot of research and investigation into stormwater as a potentially important pathway for removing microplastics in places outside of San Francisco Bay, yeah, like Los Angeles and elsewhere.
Anywhere, but, really.
And so before I mentioned exposure and hazard, and for San Francisco Bay, the researchers collected quite a bit of information, of data on how much microplastics are floating near the surface of the water, particles that could be ingested by fish and other organisms. And they collected a pretty reliable data set, if not one of the most reliable data sets that we've ever had. We were able to use this exposure data and compare it to hazard concentrations that we derived based on laboratory toxicity studies for many different organisms. And when we compare the concentration that causes harm to 5% of species, theoretically, to the concentrations that we're seeing in San Francisco Bay right now, there's significant overlap. Approximately 23% of samples exceeded a risk threshold, meaning that a decent portion of the San Francisco Bay may already be at risk for impacts to the aquatic ecosystem there.
That's crazy. Well, another risk that's come out recently is there's been a lot of media around finding microplastics in our food, but recently in our bodies, with a study saying that human breast milk of 26 of 34 samples had plastic polymers in them. What are the main pathways that microplastics are entering not only our environment, as you've talked about, but the human body?
We've been finding recently that air is the most important pathway for microplastics
When we're breathing.
Breathing. So breathing accounts for the vast majority of the particle, the microplastics that we in it are exposed to. And this is mostly due to the things that we have inside of our home. Carpets, rugs, clothing, upholstery and furniture, all of that that's made of synthetic microfibers, it's going to shed every time we use it. And often we don't have adequate filtration inside of our home. This is something that can be somewhat resolved by installing a filter inside your house. Fairly easy thing to do. Up to 10% of the dust in your home is actually made of plastic, if you look at it under a microscope.
And food packaging?
So food packaging, if you heat plastic, it's going to release way more microplastics than if you don't heat it, in most cases. So there was a recent study looking at tea bags. They found that if you there's a certain type of tea bag. It's really fancy looking. It's made of plastic tea bags. If you were to put them in cold water, you would see like tens to hundreds of microplastics come off. It would be a very small number, like per tea bag. But if you put boiling water, you see millions to trillions of microplastics come off. Basically, you're dissolving that tea bag into infinitesimally small particles that can accumulate in your body. Mm-hmm. And that was a groundbreaking study from a few years ago. It seems like every time we look at food packaging and expose it to heat, we're finding very, very, very high concentrations. One of the most relevant ones is baby bottles. If you put warm milk, the milk itself has some fats that help loosen up the microplastics, the heat. You could be exposing children to very high quantities of microplastics.
And last question for you before we go to break. Where can people find more information on microplastics? I mean, we just talked about the plastic first. And follow you, what you're doing, and what the State Water Board is doing.
In addition to the Plastiverse, there is quite a few journals out there that are focused on microplastics. I'm the editor for Frontiers in Water, which is an open, gold open access journal. Anyone in the world can access it for free. We just released two special issues on microplastics. One of them was about bio-based alternatives and are they actually a sustainable replacement for plastics? The other special issue was focused on the human health impacts of microplastics and occurrence in drinking water. So go check those out. Also the journal Microplastics and Nanoplastics, the name of the journal. Also gold open access, free to everyone. We just published about 15 articles in there about the human and ecological impacts of microplastics.
Oh gosh, I know what I'm doing this weekend. Oh, thank you so much. It has been wonderful. I just really appreciate you being on the show. I really appreciate the work that you are doing and bringing light to this. I just don't think a lot of people know what's happening and how this materials entering our environment and in our bodies. So thank you.
It's been great chatting with
you. Thank you, Dr. Coffin.
Thank you, Jessica.
Hey, listeners, to check out the extended recording of the show or to explore other shows, visit our website, ecojusticeradio.org, and subscribe to our podcast. This has been Eco Justice Radio and our show, Microplastics Are Everywhere. What's the Risk? Thank you to our guest, Dr. Scott Coffin, and thank you always to our listeners for joining us. Please connect with us on social media at Eco Justice Radio SoCal 350 and Adventures in Waste. If you like what you heard and you want others to be informed, subscribe and share the episodes. You have been listening to Eco Justice Radio, a project of SoCal 350. Executive producer Jack Eit, producer and co-host Jessica Aldridge, co-host Carrie Kim, and engineer and original music by Blake Quake Beats. And until next time, remember, the power is yours.
This is Nick, host of Bike Talk Online at KPFK since 2008. I used to have a car, but you don't need a car to get around L.A. And we talk about that every episode.
Just do it!
I donated my car to KPFK, called 877-KPFK-AUTO. They took it away. Tax deduction. Anyone can have their car taken away. Cars, boats, motorcycles, any fossil fuel vehicle.